another edition of the Health First Show. I'm your host, Dave Fuller, and we're going to be talking about heart health today with Lorna Vanderhaeg and her book, A Smart Woman's Guide to Heart Health. And in the second half of the show, we're going to be finding out about doctor screw-ups and how to avoid them. And we're going to be talking with Dr. Joe Graydon and his wife, and we're going to be talking about top screw-ups doctors make, their latest book. But before we do that, here's Rich with the health news.
A new study suggests vitamin E may help slow the mental decline seen with Alzheimer's disease. In the double-blind study, researchers analyzed data from a 2013 study that involved 561 military veterans with a probable diagnosis of Alzheimer's disease. The researchers used the Alzheimer's Disease Cooperative Study Activities of Daily Living Inventory to assess the effectiveness of the supplementation. The researchers found vitamin E supplementation to significantly slow mental decline compared to a placebo group. Specifically, those in the vitamin E group functionally declined 18.6% slower each year as compared to the placebo group. Vitamin B12 has shown benefits ranging from mental health to digestive health. Now a new study suggests antacid medications called proton pump inhibitors may be playing a significant role in lowering vitamin B12 levels. In the study, researchers compared vitamin B12 blood levels among 26,000 patients prescribed proton pump inhibitors at least once and compared them with 184,000 patients not prescribed proton pump inhibitors. They found those taking the inhibitors for at least 2 years had a 65% increased risk of having a vitamin B12 deficiency. Dosage also played a role. Those taking more than 1.5 proton pump inhibitor pills per day had a 95% increased risk, while those taking less than 0.75 pills per day had a 63% increased risk of having B12 deficiency. And finally, betaine may help increase muscle mass and be a significant contributor to maintaining overall health. In a new study, 23 men with 2 years of weight training experience were given either 2,500 milligrams of betaine or one placebo per day for 6 weeks. Before and after the study, researchers took skin fold and muscle cross-section measurements while having the subjects complete a strength testing protocol. They also provided urine samples before the study and every 2 weeks until the study ended. After 6 weeks of supplementation, those in the betaine group experienced an 18% decrease in body fat percentage compared to a 1.2% increase in the placebo group, a 2.6% increase in lean body mass compared to no change in the placebo group, an 18.2% decrease in fat mass compared to a 1.5% increase in the placebo group, and a 9.2% increase in cross-sectional arm size compared to no change in the placebo group. Finally, those in the placebo group saw a 152% increase in a breakdown product of the inflammatory protein homocysteine called HCTL after 4 weeks, compared to a 5.4% increase in the betaine group.
Thanks for that, Reg. Well, our first guest, Lorna Vanderhaeg, is one of Canada's leading experts in the area of women's health, natural women's health, and she has a number of books out, including her latest, Smart Woman's Guide to Heart Health. Lorna Vanderhaeg, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
You know, how big is this issue for women? You know, you always think of heart issues and we think of men, but how big of an issue are heart problems for women?
Well, last year in Canada, 34% of all deaths in women were due to cardiovascular disease. So that's things like heart attacks and strokes. So it's a really big deal because most women think, if we ask them what they think the leading reason of death in women is, they believe it's breast cancer. Mm-hmm. But breast cancer is very low on the list.
Hmm. So you said 30%.
34% of 34? All deaths in women last year in Canada were due to cardiovascular disease.
And is that the largest health factor in women's death?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if we're looking at heart attacks and strokes, that's the leading killer of women. And most women don't know this. And we also don't know the signs and symptoms of a heart attack. And we don't even think about getting tested. You know, it's not something that we're considering when we walk into the doctor's office because we're generally thinking about hormones and other problems instead of our heart.
Well, you know, I guess all that information was coming out about mammograms lately. You know, you would have naturally thought that breast cancer was the leading cause of the disease, you know, of women's death.
Oh, you're absolutely right. But no, the number one reason is heart disease, and it's 100% preventable. That's really the message that, you know, we as purveyors of natural health have to tell people, is that if you take care of yourself and you change your diet and you eat a few key nutritional supplements, you can prevent heart disease. So it's a sad fact when 34% of all women are dying of it when they don't have to.
Are the key contributors to women's heart disease the same as they are for men's?
Yes, they are. The only difference is the reason why more women are dying of heart attacks than men are, our arteries are smaller, so we don't have as much space to fill up with the plaque and the problems that we see in men as well. And the other thing is we don't get the same kind of care when we walk into an emergency room complaining that we think we're having a heart attack. So there are two big issues there, but yes, the risk factors are the same. So, you know, if you're eating a diet that's full of bad fats and not too many vegetables, and if you're under huge stress and you also consume too much sugar, these are the same risk factors that we see in men. And of course, weight gain is probably the biggest one, especially weight gain around the belly.
Now, does it exhibit, you know, do the factors that contribute to heart disease exhibit the same in men as they do in women? Like, you know, men have a hard, you know, belly sometimes that, you know, it's an indicator of heart disease, or, you know, you get a type 1 personality in men that, you know that guy's going to have a heart attack, or you think he's going to have a heart attack one day because he's driving so hard. Is, you know, do we see the same things exhibited in women as they are in men, or are the symptoms slightly different?
Well, you know, the classic arm clutching, chest clutching pain that we see in the movies when someone has a heart attack, that can happen in men and women, but women do have very different symptoms. They can have extreme fatigue. They can have extreme sweating, which would be confused maybe with a bad hot flash. They can feel like they have a rubber band constricted around their throat. They can feel like they have a pulled muscle from the center of their chest to the center of their back. So those are very different symptoms than what men tend to get in regards to the classic symptoms. And of course, most of us are so conditioned to think that the sign of a heart attack is that chest clutching arm and chest pain. But, you know, the other big factor is 50% of people who have a heart attack have perfectly normal blood pressure and cholesterol. So those are the people who go to the doctor and the doctor says you've got a heart of a 25-year-old, but they have a heart attack on the sidewalk.
And why is that?
The big new view on heart disease is inflammation. So it's a really good question. And inflammation, you can see when you slip and fall on the ice and you sprain your ankle, it gets red, hot, painful, and swollen. That's the kind of inflammation you can actually see. But the inflammation in our heart, which is causing heart attacks, and the inflammation in our brain, which they believe is linked to our Alzheimer's and dementia, those types of inflammation we can't see. And those are the really dangerous ones. But the good news is you can go have a blood test called a CRP, which stands for C-reactive protein, and you can find out what is your heart attack risk from the inside.
Do doctors know about the CRP?
They do, and it's covered by our BC medical plan, and it's a cheap test, and it tells us a lot. You know, if you have a high CRP above 3, your risk of heart attack and stroke is 8 times higher than someone who has one below 0.5. It also triples your risk of colon cancer and 4 times the risk of type 2 diabetes when your CRP is high. So it's a really important test to have done.
Now, are there, you know, is it with heart attacks in women, is it the same as with men? Is it at a certain age that it hits, or is it hit all ages?
Well, we're seeing more cardiovascular disease in young people simply because we're overweight. So, you know, the more overweight you are and the older you are, yes, the risk goes up or the more stress you're under. But it's not uncommon these days to have a 38-year-old have a heart attack. So it's very important that you keep those risk factors low and, you know, change your diet, take the key nutritional supplements. And that's really got to be the focus. We've got to eat more vegetables. We've got to shift our focus to healthy fats. And we also have to take nutritional supplements like omega-3s and CoQ10 and magnesium that are the superstars for our hearts.
I want to come back to that, but, you know, I think I was reading recently that, you know, hormone or postmenopausal women are more likely to have heart attacks than younger women.
Yes, it's more common in postmenopausal women and, of course, older women in general, just like it is in older men.
And is it because of the menopause or is it just because of the aging factor?
Two factors. One, when you go through menopause, you create tons of inflammation, and that can be seen in things like menopausal arthritis and menopausal fibromyalgia, or just simply more joint pain. So that tells you you've got more inflammation going on, which also increases your risk of heart attack and stroke. And then, of course, weight gain, which is a big contributing factor for women after menopause.
Okay, so now let's talk about the weight gain. Is it just because of poor diet, or is it are other factors happening after menopause?
Well, when we look at women, there's so many factors involved. And I mean, women can go through menopause and we often think our estrogen declines, but in many women, their estrogen starts surging, and that's when they get the excess belly fat. And belly fat is the big contributor to cardiovascular disease. So that three rolls of Jelly Belly that we get as we age is really the big contributor.
Now, you talk about mercury toxicity in your book. What is the relationship between mercury toxicity and heart disease, and where are we getting this mercury from?
Well, we're getting mercury from, you know, seafood. We're getting it in the environment. And in BC, because of the trade winds that are coming from Asia, we get mercury through the air as well. So we're getting more mercury in this province than, say, Saskatchewan is. And so as a result, we know that increased mercury or elevated mercury in the body can cause more stress on different organs and tissues. And one of them that really suffers is our heart.
Hmm. What can we do about mercury, because it's a heavy metal?
Mercury can be chelated out using selenium. Hmm. So selenomethionine would be the right kind of selenium to take. It's the safest one, and we should be taking it every day. And interestingly enough, our heart product, which is called MagSmart, has selenomethionine in it as part of the profile of the formula to protect the heart.
Hmm. Let's talk about magnesium, because magnesium is key for reducing blood pressure, is it not?
It is. Well, magnesium used to be the treatment our doctors would recommend long before they produced all these fancy high blood pressure medications. You've got to take the right kind of magnesium. Magnesium bisglycinate is the best form of magnesium. It gets right into the muscle of the heart. It gets right into, crosses the blood-brain barrier, so it also helps us with calming inflammation. And the reason why I love magnesium bisglycinate so much is because it works to calm that inflammation down, get that CRP level back down into the normal range.
Mm. And do people notice a difference with it, you know, just by taking magnesium?
Yes, they do. So if they take magnesium bisglycinate, and you should take it at bedtime, if you have high blood pressure, normally within 2 weeks of taking 500 milligrams a day, so 250 milligrams, say, morning and daytime, and some people may need 750 milligrams to bring their blood pressure into the normal range. But if you've got twitchy eyelids, restless legs, heart palpitations, leg cramps, you know, feeling that you've got brain fog and sleep problems, you're probably already magnesium deficient. And magnesium is used for 300 reactions in the body, not just for lowering high blood pressure and high CRP.
Are there any foods that are high in magnesium that perhaps we crave if we have a magnesium deficiency?
Well, the interesting thing is the reason why we have so many Canadians with magnesium deficiency is because it's been removed from our municipal water supplies. It also has been milled out of our grains. So it's hard to get enough magnesium from the diet. And when we're under tremendous stress, we use more magnesium. So, and we also lose magnesium every time we drink a cup of coffee.
Hmm. We're talking with Lorna Vanderhaeghe about her book, Your 30-Day Heart Smart Solution, and Smart Woman's Guide to Heart Health. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to be finding out more about what you can do to improve your heart.